Chapter 26 The garish suite overlooked the fake fairyland grounds in the rear of the hotel. Transplanted palm trees lit up by climbers of orange lights. Two huge swimming pools shimmering dark blue by the light of the desert stars. On the horizon were the sand and stone mountains that ringed Las Vegas, nestling in its neon valley. Johnny Fontaine let the heavy, richly embroidered gray drape fall and turned back to the room. A special detail of four men, a pit boss, a dealer, extra relief man, and a cocktail waitress in her scanty nightclub costume, were getting things ready for private action. Nino Valenti was lying on the sofa in the living room part of the suite, a water glass of whiskey in his hand. He watched the people from the casino setting up the blackjack table with the proper six padded chairs around its horseshoe outer rim.
"That's great. That's great," he said in a slurred voice that was not quite drunken. "Johnny, come on and gamble with me against these bastards. I got the luck. We'll beat their crawlers in."
Johnny sat on a footstool opposite the couch. "You know I don't gamble," he said. "How you feeling, Nino?" Nino Valenti grinned at him.
"Great. I got broads coming up at midnight, then some supper, then back to the blackjack table. You know I got the house beat for almost 50 grand, and they've been grinding me for a week."
"Yeah," Johnny Fontaine said. "Who do you want to leave it to when you croak?" Nino drained his glass empty.
"Johnny, where the hell did you get your rep as a swinger? You're a deadhead, Johnny. Christ, the tourists in this town have more fun than you do."
Johnny said, "Yeah. You want to lift to that blackjack table?" Nino struggled erect on the sofa and planted his feet firmly on the rug.
"I can make it," he said.
He let the glass slip to the floor and got up and walked quite steadily to where the blackjack table had been set up. The dealer was ready. The pit boss stood behind the dealer watching. The relief dealer sat on a chair away from the table. The cocktail waitress sat on another chair in a line of vision so that she could see any of Nino Valenti's gestures. Nino rapped on the green baize with his knuckles.
"Chips," he said.
The pit boss took a pad from his pocket and filled out a slip and put it in front of Nino with a small fountain pen.
"Here you are, Mr. Valenti," he said. "The usual 5,000 to start."
Nino scrawled his signature on the bottom of the slip, and the pit boss put it in his pocket. He nodded to the dealer. The dealer, with incredibly deft fingers, took stacks of black and gold $100 chips from the built-in racks before him. In not more than 5 seconds, Nino had 5 even stacks of $100 chips before him. Each stack had 10 chips. There were 6 squares, a little larger than playing card shapes, etched in white on the green baize, each square placed to correspond to where a player would sit. Now Nino was placing bets on 3 of these squares, single chips, and so playing 3 hands each for $100. He refused to take a hit on all 3 hands because the dealer had a 6-up, a bust card, and the dealer did bust. Nino raked in his chips and turned to Johnny Fontaine.
"Ah, that's how to start the night, huh, Johnny?"
Johnny smiled. It was unusual for a gambler like Nino to have to sign a chit while gambling. A word was usually good enough for the high rollers. Maybe they were afraid Nino wouldn't remember his takeout because of his drinking. They didn't know that Nino remembered everything. Nino kept winning, and after the 3rd round, lifted a finger at the cocktail waitress. She went to the bar at the end of the room and brought him his usual rye in a water glass. Nino took the drink, switched it to his other hand so he could put an arm around the waitress.
"Sit with me, honey. Play a few hands. Bring me luck."
The cocktail waitress was a very beautiful girl, but Johnny could see she was all cold hustle, no real personality, though she worked at it. She was giving Nino a big smile, but her tongue was hanging out for one of those black and gold chips. What the hell, Johnny thought. Why shouldn't she get some of it? He just regretted that Nino wasn't getting something better for his money. Nino let the waitress play his hands for a few rounds and then gave her one of the chips and a pat on the behind to send her away from the table. Johnny motioned to her to bring him a drink. She did so, but she did it as if she were playing the most dramatic moment in the most dramatic movie ever made. She turned all her charm on the great Johnny Fontaine. She made her eyes sparkle with invitation. Her walk was the sexiest walk ever walked. Her mouth was very slightly parted, as if she were ready to bite the nearest object of her obvious passion. She resembled nothing so much as a female animal in heat, but it was a deliberate act. Johnny Fontaine thought, "Oh, Christ, one of them." It was the most popular approach of women who wanted to take him to bed. It only worked when he was very drunk, and he wasn't drunk now. He gave the girl one of his famous grins and said, "Thank you, honey." The girl looked at him and parted her lips in a thank-you smile. Her eyes went all smoky, her body tensed, with the torso leaning slightly back from the long, tapering legs in their mesh stockings. An enormous tension seemed to be building up in her body. Her breasts seemed to grow fuller and swell burstingly against her thin, scantily cut blouse. Then her whole body gave a slight quiver that almost let off a sexual twang. The whole impression was one of a woman having an orgasm simply because Johnny Fontaine had smiled at her and said, "Thank you, honey." It was very well done. It was done better than Johnny had ever seen it done before. But by now, he knew it was fake, and the odds were always good that the broads who did it were a lousy lay. He watched her go back to her chair and nursed his drink slowly. He didn't want to see that little trick again. He wasn't in the mood for it tonight. It was an hour before Nino Valenti began to go. He started leaning first, wavered back, and then plunged off the chair straight to the floor. But the pit boss and the relief dealer had been alerted by the first weave and caught him before he hit the ground. They lifted him and carried him through the parted drapes that led to the bedroom of the suite. Johnny kept watching as the cocktail waitress helped the other two men undress Nino and shove him under the bedcovers. The pit boss was counting Nino's chips and making a note on his pad of chits, then guarding the table with its dealer's chips. Johnny said to him, "How long has that been going on?" The pit boss shrugged. "He went early tonight. The first time we got the house, Doc, and he fixed Mr. Valenti up with something and gave him some sort of lecture. Then Nino told us we shouldn't call the doc when that happened, just put him to bed and he'd be okay in the morning. So that's what we do. He's pretty lucky. He was a winner again tonight, almost $3,000. Johnny Fontaine said, "Well, let's get the house doc up here tonight, okay? Page the casino floor if you have to." It was almost 15 minutes before Jules Siegel came into the suite. Johnny noted with irritation that this guy never looked like a doctor. Tonight he was wearing a blue, loose-knit polo shirt with white trim, some sort of white suede shoes and no socks. He looked funny as hell carrying the traditional black doctor's bag. Johnny said, "You ought to figure out a way to carry your stuff in a cut-down golf bag." Jules grinned understandingly. "Yeah, this medical school carryall is a real drag, scares the hell out of people. They should change the color anyway." He went over to where Nino was lying in bed. As he opened his bag, he said to Johnny, "Thanks for that check you sent me as a consultant. It was excessive. I didn't do that much." "Like hell you didn't," Johnny said. "Anyway, forget that. That was a long time ago. What's with Nino?" Jules was making a quick examination of heartbeat, pulse, and blood pressure. He took a needle out of his bag and shoved it casually into Nino's arm and pressed the plunger. Nino's sleeping face lost its waxy paleness. Color came into the cheeks, as if the blood had started pumping faster. "Very simple diagnosis," Jules said briskly. "I had a chance to examine him and run some tests when he first came here and fainted. I had him moved to the hospital before he regained consciousness. He's got diabetes, mild adult stabile, which is no problem if you take care of it with medication and diet and so forth. He insists on ignoring it. Also, he is firmly determined to drink himself to death. His liver is going and his brain will go. Right now, he's in a mild diabetic coma. My advice is to have him put away." Johnny felt a sense of relief. It couldn't be too serious. All Nino had to do was take care of himself. You mean in one of those joints where they dry you out? Johnny asked.
Jules went over to the bar in the far corner of the room and made himself a drink.
No, he said. I mean committed. You know, the crazy house.
Don't be funny, Johnny said.
I'm not joking, Jules said. I'm not up on all the psychiatric jazz, but I know something about it, part of my trade. Your friend Nino can be put back into fairly good shape unless the liver damage has gone too far, which we can't know until an autopsy, really. But the real disease is in his head. In essence, he doesn't care if he dies. Maybe he even wants to kill himself. Until that is cured, there's no hope for him. That's why I say have him committed, and then he can undergo the necessary psychiatric treatment.
There was a knock on the door, and Johnny went to answer it. It was Lucy Mancini. She came into Johnny's arms and kissed him.
Oh, Johnny, it's so good to see you, she said.
It's been a long time, Johnny Fontaine said. He noticed that Lucy had changed. She had gotten much slimmer, her clothes were a hell of a lot better, and she wore them better. Her hairstyle fitted her face in a sort of boyish cut. She looked younger and better than he had ever seen her, and the thought crossed his mind that she could keep him company here in Vegas. It would be a pleasure hanging out with a real broad. But before he could turn on the charm, he remembered she was the doc's girl. So it was out. He made his smile just friendly and said, "What are you doing coming to Nino's apartment at night, huh?"
She punched him in the shoulder. "I heard Nino was sick and that Jules came up. I just wanted to see if I could help. Nino's okay, isn't he?"
"Sure," Johnny said. "He'll be fine." Jules Siegel had sprawled out on the couch.
"Like hell he is," Jules said.
"I suggest we all sit here and wait for Nino to come too. Then we all talk him into committing himself. Lucy, he likes you. Maybe you can help. Johnny, if you're a real friend of his, you'll go along. Otherwise, old Nino's liver will shortly be Exhibit A in some university medical lab."
Johnny was offended by the doctor's flippant attitude. Who the hell did he think he was? He started to say so, but Nino's voice came from the bed.
"Hey, old buddy, how about a drink?"
Nino was sitting up in bed. He grinned at Lucy and said,
"Hey, baby, come to old Nino."
He held his arms wide open. Lucy sat on the edge of the bed and gave him a hug. Oddly enough, Nino didn't look bad at all now, almost normal. Nino snapped his fingers.
"Come on, Johnny, give me a drink. The night's young yet. Where the hell's my blackjack table?"
Jules took a long slug from his own glass and said to Nino, "You can't have a drink. Your doctor forbids it." Nino scowled.
"Screw my doctor."
Then a play-acting look of contrition came on his face.
"Hey, Julie, that's you. You're my doctor, right? I don't mean you, old buddy. Johnny, give me a drink or I get up out of bed and get it myself."
Johnny shrugged and moved toward the bar. Jules said indifferently, "I'm saying he shouldn't have it." Johnny knew why Jules irritated him. The doctor's voice was always cool, the words never stressed, no matter how dire, the voice always low and controlled. If he gave a warning, the warning was in the words alone. The voice itself was neutral, as if uncaring. It was this that made Johnny sore enough to bring Nino his water glass of whiskey. Before he handed it over, he said to Jules, "This won't kill him, right?"
"No, it won't kill him," Jules said calmly.
Lucy gave him an anxious glance, started to say something, then kept still. Meanwhile, Nino had taken the whiskey and poured it down his throat. Johnny was smiling down at Nino. They had shown the punk doctor. Suddenly, Nino gasped. His face seemed to turn blue. He couldn't catch his breath and was choking for air. His body leaped upward like a fish. His face was gorged with blood, his eyes bulging. Jules appeared on the other side of the bed facing Johnny and Lucy. He took Nino by the neck and held him still and plunged the needle into the shoulder near where it joined the neck. Nino went limp in his hands. The heaves of his body subsided, and after a moment he slumped down back onto his pillow. his eyes closed in sleep. Johnny, Lucy, and Jules went back into the living room part of the suite and sat around the huge, solid coffee table. Lucy picked up one of the aquamarine phones and ordered coffee and some food to be sent up. Johnny had gone over to the bar and mixed himself a drink. "Did you know we would have that reaction from the whiskey?" Johnny asked. Jules shrugged.
"I was pretty sure you would."
Johnny said sharply, "Then why didn't you warn me?"
"I warned you," Jules said.
"You didn't warn me right," Johnny said with cold anger. "You are really one hell of a doctor. You don't give a shit. You tell me to get Nino in a crazy house. You don't bother to use a nice word like sanatorium. You really like to stick it to people, right?"
Lucy was staring down in her lap. Jules kept smiling at Fontaine. "Nothing was going to stop you from giving Nino that drink. You had to show you didn't have to accept my warnings, my orders. Remember when you offered me a job as your personal physician after that throat business? I turned you down because I knew we could never get along. A doctor thinks he's God. He's the high priest in modern society. That's one of his rewards. But you would never treat me that way. I'd be a flunky god to you. Like those doctors you guys have in Hollywood. Where do you get those people from anyway? Christ, don't they know anything? Or they just don't care? They must know what's happening to Nino, but they just give him all kinds of drugs to keep him going. They wear those silk suits and they kiss your ass because you're a power movie man, and so you think they are great doctors. Showbiz, docs, you gotta have heart, right? But they don't give a fuck if you live or die. Well, my little hobby, unforgivable as it is to keep people alive. I let you give Nino that drink to show you what could happen to him." Jules leaned toward Johnny Fontaine, his voice still calm, unemotional. "Your friend is almost terminal. Do you understand that? He hasn't got a chance without therapy and strict medical care. His blood pressure and diabetes and bad habits can cause a cerebral hemorrhage in this very next instant. His brain will blow itself apart. Is that vivid enough for you?"
"Sure," I said, "crazy house. I want you to understand what's needed, or you won't make a move. I'll put it to you straight. You can save your buddy's life by having him committed. Otherwise, kiss him goodbye."
Lucy murmured, "Jules, darling, Jules, don't be so tough. Just tell him."
Jules stood up. His usual cool was gone, Johnny Fontaine noticed with satisfaction. His voice, too, had lost its quiet, unaccented monotone. "Do you think this is the first time I've had to talk to people like you in a situation like this?" Jules said. "I did it every day. Lucy says, don't be so tough, but she doesn't know what she's talking about. You know, I used to tell people, don't eat so much or you'll die. Don't smoke so much or you'll die. Don't work so much or you'll die. Don't drink so much or you'll die. Nobody listens. You know why? Because I don't say, you will die tomorrow. Well, I can tell you that Nino may very well die tomorrow."
Jules went over to the bar and mixed himself another drink.
"How about it, Johnny? Are you going to get Nino committed?"
Johnny said, "I don't know."
Jules took a quick drink at the bar and filled his glass again.
"You know, it's a funny thing. You can smoke yourself to death, drink yourself to death, work yourself to death, and even eat yourself to death. But that's all acceptable. The only thing you can't do medically is screw yourself to death, and yet that's where they put all the obstacles."
He paused to finish his drink. "But even that's trouble, for women anyway. I used to have women who weren't supposed to have any more babies. It's dangerous, I'd tell them. You could die, I'd tell them. And a month later they'd pop in, their faces all rosy, and say, 'Doctor, I think I'm pregnant,' and sure enough, they'd kill the rabbit. But it's dangerous, I'd tell them. My voice used to have expression in those days, and they'd smile at me and say, 'But my husband and I are very strict Catholics,' they'd say.